Welcome to the first podcast of The Way Forward Regenerative Conversations, sponsored by the Elders Action Network. I'm Jim Burke, producer of this podcast. My partners in this endeavor are Alain Gauthier and Dr. John Izzo. This podcast series is dedicated to having regenerative conversations about the way forward for humanity and the planet. In our conversation today, the three of us will share with you why it's important to question whether the existing paradigm is still working, and if not, what needs to replace it. We'll be talking about why we are starting this podcast now, as well as our intent behind it. We will also share how our respective journeys led us to doing this important work together. Now let's start this podcast.
I am Dr. John Izzo, and on behalf of my colleagues, Jim Burke and Alain Gauthier, I want to welcome you to the first in the Way Forward Regenerative Conversations podcast series, where we will explore how humanity and society need to find a way forward to build the kind of present and future that all of us want. As I've traveled across the world for the last 30 years, I often ask audiences this question: do you think the path we're on right now, as a society and as a planet, if we stay on this path, do you think it will lead to a positive future and present for humanity and for our children and grandchildren and the earth? And I ask people to raise their hand if they think the way we're going now is working. And in an audience of 1,000 people, maybe 5 to 10 hands think we're on the right path. And that's why we started this podcast series. We want to have regenerative conversations about how we might find a new way forward in all the ways we have to build a great present and a great future. So welcome, and I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Jim, who's going to lead us in our conversation.
Thank you, John. I think you did a wonderful introduction to this podcast. And what I'd like to do first is introduce the audience to the different members of this group. So first, I'm going to ask Alain to say a little bit about yourself and tell us about what led you here to this group and doing this project.
Thank you, Jim. Yes, what led me here is I worked for many, many years as a consultant to large and smaller organizations. And in a way, reinforcing the current system, the current paradigm. And I am now retired, and I'm looking at the consequences of moving forward as we are. And so by working with a wider variety of organizations, including nonprofit, I realized that there was another way to look at what business is about and what society is about that I've been exploring with some colleagues now. And that's where the word regeneration came from. Is the idea is, can we actually renew our ways of thinking and our ways of behaving and our ways of acting in that would produce better outcomes, not just for us, but for our children and grandchildren?
Thank you, Alain. John, what about you? What led you to being part of this group?
Well, you know, for the last 35 years, I've really had one central passion, which is, you know, how do we build a society and a world that works for everyone and our children and grandchildren as well? And I've been writing books, mostly aimed at businesses and business leaders about the role that they can play in creating a great present and a better future. And this podcast, to me, is so important because, you know, we have a lot of conversations where people say, this is the way, you know, this is the path, this is what we have to do. And everyone has their own take. But I was really intrigued by the idea of starting a podcast series where we don't have the answer, but we're trying to together figure it out. What are the options? What are the ways we might build a better present and a better future? And like Alon, I've had a kind of lifetime passion to explore those questions and feel that there's really a need for regenerative conversations where we really have some honest dialogue about what our options are and how we can do better. And as I said in my introduction, I think almost all of us agree the path we're on isn't working. It's not going to lead to the kind of future that we want. So I'm just excited that through our guests and through our conversations, we can get all of us thinking about how can we build a better future.
Oh, I think that's really important. I think we all agree, and we've talked about that. It is not really working. For me, the path through practicing medicine for 25 years, I'm a retired physician assistant and a retired social worker. I worked in government service for almost 30 years and for the Department of Veterans Affairs, working with veterans who fought in Vietnam and in other wars in a post-traumatic stress unit, and then also working in a homeless unit. For me, I would have to say that I look at healthcare, and healthcare is not working for everyone. For me, working in government, I saw where the system didn't always serve everyone. I was really interested in organizational development and became involved in hospital administration. And I saw that the system had to change. And I got really frustrated. It's difficult to change the government. It's difficult to change large organizations. So what I went on was a journey of self-discovery, and I did this through the Presencing Institute and with Otto Schammer and ULAB. And some words popped in my head, and part of that was sustainability, regeneration, healthy living, resilience. What is it like to be an elder in the 21st century? So I went on a journey to discover that, and I got involved with an organization who is sponsoring us, the Elders Action Network. And this is what came out of that journey. This has evolved. And we came together as a group and decided to explore that, what it's like to be an elder in the 21st century, because much of the problems of the world were caused by us. We've used much of the resources. And so this is a chance to have a conversation about that. This is a chance to come together with many of the thought experts in the areas of many of the problems we're dealing with and talk to them and have conversations and see if we can come up with some good ideas. So I'm going to stop there, and I'm going to say, who's this podcast for? Who do we want to be our audience here?
I think, first of all, it's for any person who wants to know how we can do better. And I think one of the things about this podcast is this is not blame and shame. We're not here to say who's at fault or who's created the problem. We're here to ask, how can we do better? And you know, we are in the older demographic. We're three white guys over 60, and we own that. We don't think we have the answer. We do think, as you said, Jim, that our generation has disproportionately, you know, created the system that we're in now. And I did a TED Talk over a decade ago now where I really asked the question, what was going to be the legacy of our generation? And I feel to a great extent, we kind of left a lot of dangling participles of problems that, you know, begging for solutions, from a lack of equity to the deterioration of governance to environmental sustainability to a lack of ability to have discourse, and on it goes. And to me, this is for anybody of any age who is curious about the future and how we can do better than we've been doing. And we hope to explore all kinds of territory and have guests of all ages and persuasions. And so if you're coming to this podcast because you want someone just to reinforce your point of view, you're in the wrong place. If you come here because you're really curious about how many different people are thinking about the many challenges we face and the many possible solutions, then that's who I hope will come here so we can create regenerative conversations that'll happen outside the podcast between you and the people in your spheres of influence.
Well, John, I find that very exciting. I really want to come listen to this podcast also. So I want to ask Alon a question here. Alon, John's already said that, you know, we're in the elder generation. Do you think elders have a special role to play in looking at the problems we have and in maybe proposing ways to solve that?
Yes, Jim. In fact, you and I came together and met through the Elders Action Network, and we invited John to join us in the regenerative elder process, which is an attempt to, in fact, invite elders to reconsider their role. And I think the podcast is actually intended for all people who are in some form of leadership position, not from an institutional perspective, but who want themselves to be explorer, leading the way in, and it can be in any of the circle of influence. So that's fairly wide. Yes, elders have been to some extent marginalized themselves in modern society, and they can play a role. They have a few additional years now, sometimes several decades, to actually reconsider, look at their own life and say, yes, are there some choices, different choices we can make? And then try to model this way of being in the world and relating to others that could have an influence with others. So elders, yes, but as John said, many more people who are themselves asking the same questions. And now what?
You've said it very eloquently. We're elders and we have a special responsibility and a special role here. John, your wife had an interesting perspective when you talked to her about this podcast. What was that perspective?
Well, I think, first of all, she does some stand-up comedy. And she said, you know, you guys need to lean into being three old white guys and not shy away from it. And I think it is kind of important because we don't think we have the answers. In one of my books, I said age and wisdom sometimes go together, but not always. So you can be older and not wise, but there is something to be said for experience. So what we bring between us is, you know, 100 years of probably working experience plus of being out in the world in all kinds of realms, in business, in the military, in healthcare, and in nonprofits. So and in government. So we bring a lot of perspective. And I guess I saw a survey a few years ago where they asked each generation who was most responsible to solve the problems we're facing as a society. And younger people, millennials at the time, because Gen Z wasn't even around yet, it was about a decade ago, millennials and baby boomers both agreed that young people were the ones who had to solve the problem. And I disagree with that. I want to say to younger people, don't let us off the hook. We should not be going out to the golf course and just cruising for the rest of our lives. We're the wealthiest, most highly educated, longest lived group of elders in human history. And we have an opportunity to, we have to stay in the game. And yet at the same time, as I work with a lot of younger people, they have a new perspective and the innovation that we need. So it's on all of us. And so we just want to play our part as elders and challenge people of our age while engaging in conversations with people at every age of how together we can make this happen, because we've all got to be in this.
Once again, I love it. I want to listen to it. It really sounds exciting. So are there some blind spots? Given who we are in our age, are there some blind spots? And how's the podcast going to deal with those blind spots that we may have? Anybody have an idea on that?
I can try. For me, one of the blind spots is the fact that especially when we are toward the last part of our life, we may tend to look at what has made us successful. What are the habits, the views of looking at things that made us successful? And that could be a trap because things are changing a lot and we see the consequences of some of these ways of doing and being. And that's what the podcast would address. To what extent do we need to question the beliefs, the assumptions, the ways of looking at things that actually are not sustainable or shouldn't be sustained. So that's one of the things we want to address is how do we renew our perspective? How do we change our paradigm, if we can use this word? Because if we don't change the filters through which we have looked at life, it's very difficult to reinvent, to renew, regenerate ourselves. And that will spend quite a bit of time. And I'm personally interested in what we can learn outside the dominant worldview, for instance, in the indigenous or the kinship worldview that says that we are not separate from each other. We are not separate from nature. And how can we live much more in sync with the whole of life, not just the part that we know best and have dealt with in the past? So that's just one aspect of the paradigm, is to look at ourselves differently in relationship to everyone else and in relationship to nature and the earth, of course.
You know, Alan, let me just pick up on something you said there, because I think it's so important. You know, so often, you know, when we think about the way forward, whether it's in our personal lives or our collective lives, that often what happens is that the way we've been acting, it was adaptive to an earlier time in our lives.
Indeed.
But it's no longer working. I'll give you a simple example. You know, Jim and I have done some therapy and psychology, you know, and so, for example, maybe you grew up in a home where fighting and arguments led to bad things, verbal or physical abuse. So you learned to be a peacemaker, to stuff any disagreement you had and to make peace. Now you're an adult, you don't live in that same world. And whenever there's an argument between a friend or in your family with your partner, you think this is a disaster. So you don't speak up. You try to make peace instead of really dealing with the issue, because that was adaptive at one time in your life, but it doesn't work anymore. And I think so many of the things we have to challenge around the way forward have to do with that. Like, I just give you two simple examples. For thousands and thousands of years, nature was big and humanity was small. We had a very small impact on the planet as a whole. So it made sense that our paradigm was to conquer nature. Nature was kind of the enemy. If we could harness nature, we'd be successful. Well, now in just a few generations, the whole world has changed. We're now literally the biggest force of nature, changing the atmosphere, the oceans, the soil, the forests, right? And so now we have to think differently. Now we have to help nature. We have to be in harmony with nature. Mm-hmm. But it was adaptive at one time to have this kind of conquer nature mentality. Another simple example to me is, for thousands of years, we lived in tribes. What my tribe did had very little influence on what a tribe would happen to a tribe thousands of miles away. So we learned to kind of look out for our tribe. But now everything that we do impacts the whole planet. What every tribe does impacts every other tribe. So now tribal thinking, which once upon a time actually helped humanity thrive, now must be challenged, because that very tribalism gets in the way of us solving collectively big problems that we share. So I won't go on, but I think this is one of the important things about the way forward, is just to challenge maybe some of our existing ways of thinking that maybe even worked at one time, but now they're not working anymore. So how do we have to evolve our thinking and our system? And you could go, I could go on and on, system after system of kind of things were working, but they're not working now. And how do we change? And human beings are kind of hardwired to just keep doing what we've been doing. And it's one of the big issues, I think, in terms of the way forward, is we stay on the same channel, just like you do when you're watching TV. It's easier than changing the channel.
And if I may add to that, Jim, actually modern science, including quantum physics, has shown us that what indigenous people have believed for a long, long time, that everything is interrelated. But now we see more of the consequences of ignoring that. Mm-hmm. And that's what you just said. And it's interesting indeed that quantum physics, which is the most modern part of physics, if you like, is more easily understood, according to people, mm-hmm. by indigenous people than by modern men, white men, if you like, because that's not what they grew up with. Yes, so science is catching up with beliefs that have been there for a long time, and that served us well by maintaining the living environment on which we depend and in which we thrive.
So do the Way Forward plan to explore these issues, and who are some of the possible people you may be interviewing?
Well, first I want to just pick up on one more thing Alon said, which ironically, sometimes the way forward may mean looking back to the way things used to be, right? And so the way forward sometimes is something new. Sometimes it's recapturing something old that we've forgotten. And as Alon said, in many indigenous and earlier human societies, the sense of the need to be in harmony with nature and to be in a place of gratitude and to be in a place of regeneration was kind of a part of our earlier thinking. But to your question, Jim, I mean, I think, first of all, we hope to explore lots of territory, from governance and democracy to science and technology to economics to the role of business to sustainability to even how can we stay regenerative in our own lives. And so I think what we hope is to bring on guests who bring a unique perspective and that Alon and I can challenge them and dialogue with them. And we don't think any one person's going to have the answer. And we want to expose you to lots of different ideas, some of which we may disagree with, some of which you may disagree with. And I think one of the real dangers of modern society, one of the things in the way of the way forward, is how so many of us expose ourselves now only to ideas we already agree with. So my hope is that we will have guests on that we may vehemently disagree with on occasion, and that we may have guests on that you agree with or kind of disagree with, but we want our thinking, all of our collective thinking, to be challenged in a place of open curiosity. So we hope to bring in people who bring that kind of curiosity, but expertise in different areas, right? We got a high list of high hope people that we'll have on, but we just hope to bring you the best thinkers and people doing interesting things in all the different ways we have to explore the way forward, and not to come with a position. Let me say at the very beginning, we don't know what the way forward is. We want to explore it with you. So this is not about our answer. It's let's find the answer together.
Exploration is key, John. I agree with you. And we'll probably invite some people who have written books who are at the edge of their field, for instance, challenging the current form of organization, which is predominant, the hierarchical organization, and look into networks, for instance, as the way of the future. There can be also developmental psychologists that would throw some perspectives on why do we look differently at things. And one of these, Robert Keegan, says that it's not by chance that we have now 20 or 30 years more to live, and to have a different view of what can be done. And because we can first, and you've written a book about that, John, that at 60 or so, we can start looking at our life in the different version we have, making sense of some of the steps we've gone through, and therefore be open to other people who are also looking out of the box, if you like, and saying, yes, that there is something to really pursue there. So thank you for underlining the exploration part.
Yeah, I think it's so important. And, you know, back to this idea that it's not working now. You know, Peter Senge, who wrote, as many of you may know, a book called The Fifth Discipline, and is famous for having made systems thinking famous. He didn't really invent it, but he made it famous. He says that the nature of a system problem is that the system produces outcomes that very few of the individuals would choose. Mm-hmm. And I bet if you polled people all over the world, would you like us to be at war with each other? Or would you like there to be some people who have nothing to eat while some people have more than they could need for many lifetimes? But would you like to hand an unsustainable planet to the next generation? And we can go on and on, right? The vast majority of people would say no to all those things. No, I want peace. I want to get along with my neighbor. I want everyone to have enough. I want a sustainable world. I want us to be able to have civil conversations with each other. And yet that's not the outcome that the system is producing. And so I think that ought to make all of us just be curious about what might we do differently. And I think that's the kind of conversations we hope to be having with, as you said, people who are writing or doing interesting things that we think it'd be good for y'all to know about, and people we want to have a conversation with, and inviting you to join us with it.
Well, this sounds very exciting. Anything else you all want to say about this podcast? I'm getting more excited about listening to it all the time.
But, you know, one thing I guess I would add is that I think we're quite aware that we have to think about the way forward for ourselves as well as for the society and the planet. So we hope to explore that because so often these are so, you know, interconnected. I mean, I give you a great example, which is I think one of the ways the paradigm has to change is from short-term thinking to long-term or generational thinking. And having spent most of my life in the world of business where quarterly profits, what public companies live and die by, and often are punished for making decisions that are in the long-term interest of the, mm-hmm. of the company, but in the short-term disinterest of immediate profits. And the same thing is true in our personal lives. Scott Peck, who wrote one of the greatest books of the last century, The Road Less Traveled, from his 40 years of doing psychoanalysis, said that the core pathology almost every one of his clients was the inability to delay gratification, which was to put the pain first. It's as true in our personal lives as it is in our collective lives. It's painful to go to the gym, but the long-term gain is our health. It's easier to sit in front of the TV and watch Cheetos. And that's the immediate gratification. And as a society, we have that same issue. So I guess what I'm saying is, I think we want to explore how this is a very personal piece for all of us. Because often many of you know anything about like science and biology, they talk about fractals. So a broccoli is a great example. If you dissect your broccoli, you'll see the big broccoli is just then a bigger version of the single broccoli. And then you go all the way down to that tiny little piece of the broccoli, which is just a fractal. It's exactly the same as the whole broccoli. So I think that the way forward often means looking at how these things that happen in our personal lives, like the inability to delay gratification, simply at a fractal level, are the very pathology that the whole society has, right? So it's painful to deal with climate change now. It's going to be more painful if we don't delay gratification. So I think we want to get personal for you too and help you be more regenerative in your own life, because often it's just a fractal of what the whole society is dealing with.
And I would add, John, that one of the aspects of maturity at the individual level, but it also applies to the collective level, is to move from the either or kind of choice. Mm-hmm. You know, it's either that or that, to the both and see where, in fact, that level of synthesis of some of the position that seem to be part is actually important for the future. And that is true at the individual level. And it's true also at the regional or national or even global level. So to be attentive to how much we can improve our own perspectives, or at least if not improve them, change them, so that we become vectors or vehicles for larger changes in our community and in our larger settings. So that's what is important for me also. Yes.
You know, Alon, just to pick up something you said too, I think you hinted at it, is that we can't change if I don't change. So like in some ways, all change is personal. So if you're going to listen to this podcast series, know that we want to challenge ourselves and you to also change. Because, and I always think about in the United States, for example, the lack of ability to have civil discourse with mm-hmm. people who disagree with you politically. And people blame the media, they blame the politicians. But I say, let's start looking at it myself. How am I contributing to the inability to have a civil conversation with people who disagree with me, right? So in a way, all change is personal. So if you don't want to be challenged to like look at yourself, this might not be the right podcast for you. But I think all of us know that we're all part of it, right? And so I think your point, Alon, is so important, right? That we got to always come back to that, right? We can't shy away from that.
And that's why we want to invite you in a dialogue where the ability to listen to a different perspective and take it in before we prepare the counter argument is so important. And then speak with also a sense of possibly humility that I don't see the whole thing yet. So yes, we will, I think, between us, ourselves and with the audience, we'll try to speak in a dialogue way, this capacity to receive and also offer what makes sense.
I love you use the word humility. You know, it comes from the humus, you know, meaning the ground of the earth, right? Is that we want you to know, I'll say it again, that we do not have the answer. This is not called the way forward because we know the way forward. That's why it's the Way Forward Regenerative Conversations podcast. We want to have some regenerative conversations about what that way forward is and get as much diversity as we can and hopefully leave you each time wanting to know more and getting curious about some things we've raised and thinking about what you can do the moment you leave the podcast to be more regenerative for yourself and others.
We've been throwing around that term regeneration. Alon, do you want to define for us what regeneration is so that our audience could a little better understand it?
Yes, and a number of people, some of you may be familiar with the book by Paul Hawken, called Regeneration. And he defines himself, regeneration is to restore wholeness by putting life at the center of every decision and action we take. So it's synonymous with other words like renewal, revitalization, resurgence, recovery. And really, regenerative living, both Jim and I are part of a section of or a small unit of the Elders Action Network, where regenerative living means creating the conditions that are conducive for life to continue and renewing itself, to transcend it into new forms, because that's what life does, that natural life does, and to flourish amid ever-changing life and planetary conditions. So I think this is a definition that comes from biology, but it extends to our own nature as human beings, being able to bring our consciousness into what we do and how we relate to others.
So we talked about regeneration. We talked about inner and outer work and action. We talked about we want to have a dialogue. So this is not a program where we're going to interview people. This is a program where we're going to engage the guests in a dialogue about what's not working, what's the possible futures, how do we have to reform the way we look at life. But one of the things I think John really identified was that there is no outer work unless we do inner work, and there's no action in the world unless we act first on ourselves. Any more thoughts about that?
I think, again, first, understand that concept of fractals, right? So the society is merely an outgrowth of our collective individuality. I often say this when I work with organizations around organizational change. And I say the fascinating thing is there really is no such thing as organizational change. There's only individual change that collectively means the organization has changed. A few years ago, there was a documentary that I saw on Netflix. I don't remember who produced it, but the whole gist of it was scientists for years had no idea why herd animals move from one watering spot or, you know, one place to another. Animals like zebras and wildebeest. And they had the idea that there must be a lead zebra or like a lead wildebeest. And like, you know, when Alon decides to go, we all go, right? But then through time-lapse photography, they tried to ask the question, how does it actually work? And the answer is it turned out to be more beautiful than their original idea. So it turns out that there is no lead zebra. There is no lead wildebeest. What happens is a few of the zebras start to get a little antsy. They start looking over here, and then a few more start to look over there. And then eventually, almost in one collective moment, the whole herd moves. But the point is, the movement didn't come from a leader. It came from the collective shift that happened within the herd. And I think in many ways, it mirrors what has to happen in humanity, right? This is not going to be one person, you know, one world leader. First of all, there is no world leader. I'm sure we'll talk about that. That's one of the problems, right? But even if there was a world leader, they probably wouldn't be smart enough to get us there. It's the collective consciousness of all of us starting to get curious about another watering hole, another place we might go that would be better for the herd. And I'd like to believe that this podcast is part of stirring the collective consciousness of each of us individually to start to be curious about another watering hole, another place we might go as a society. And maybe then we'll all make that shift together. So I happen to believe all change is ultimately personal. And what we see as societal or organizational change is simply the collective shift that happens in individuals. So I think it's a beautiful metaphor for what we're hoping to be here. We wanted the herd to start to get curious and see some other watering holes. And we believe maybe if we can do that, that we can help, not do it, but help shift the whole way forward. And that's really what we're hoping to do.
Yes. And if I may add to that, I've been working with Peter Senge for about 35 years, and he insists on the fact that an organization is made of teams. Mm-hmm. And so I've been a midwife of teams for about 35 years. And what I discovered, as many others, is that the sum that the team represents, and sometimes more than its parts, the capacity of being able to find, and I, that led me find solutions that no one individual could think of by themselves. Mm-hmm. And that led me to write a book on evolutionary co-leadership. So what does it mean to be a co-leader? Somebody who is able to dance with their partners in finding ways to bring the best of their talents to bear, in finding innovative solutions that no one necessarily could find by themselves. So, and that can be true, not just in an organization, in a community, in a variety of groups. So we may address that too. So how does one, by one's own attitude, humility, perspective, enables other group of individuals to modify their own ways of being and acting?
By the way, Alon, I love that image of being a midwife of teams. I was thinking, of course, we're men, though we may be fathers, but having been there at childbirth, not experienced it, I'll quickly say, that looks like it's kind of a pretty hard to bring a human into the world as joyful as it is. But boy, midwifing teams in society, that like doesn't last for a few hours. It's probably a few decades, you know, endeavor. But I like the midwife metaphor because we all have to do the hard work. We want to be present.
Yeah.
To really, this is kind of Lamaze for society, maybe. How do we learn to breathe into our curiosity together? And I'd like to think we could help be midwives, if you will, for just thinking about the way forward. So I love that metaphor. It's a very rich metaphor, I think.
Yeah. And the challenge, John, is to both do this midwifing work, but also the hospicing work that needs to be done with things that have lived too long or it to be too predominant to be useful in the future. So it's a very interesting going back and forth between what do we need to let go and what can we let come together.
Yeah. You know, it's so important, Alon, because the way forward, just like in our personal lives again, requires often letting go of old habits that we often cherish or beliefs that we hold very dearly, right? Mm-hmm. And we'll just tease you today. We don't want you to get turned off because we choose your sacred cow, right? So I won't choose anyone in particular, but just as a dangling participle for you to think about, a question mark is, think about all those things that we need to let go of.
Yeah.
The things that maybe once worked or even some of our cherished beliefs.
Indeed.
And we hope to challenge some sacred cows because we often need to let go of some things. And I love that. It's so true. It's not just about what needs to emerge, Sometimes you can't have a new beginning until you do a nice funeral to say, you know, it's time to say goodbye to something, even if I don't know what comes next. I know this isn't working. You know, I think about addiction. And when you go to Alcoholics Anonymous or an addiction group, the first thing you say is, hi, I'm John. Hi, I'm Jim. Hi, I'm Alan. I'm an alcoholic. Which is a way of saying it's not work. I don't know where I'm going yet, but I know it's not working. Mm-hmm. And we need to do a little of that, of just to recognize, okay, maybe this isn't working. And that's the first step, yes, to me, to change. Just, well, okay, what do we need to let go of? I don't know what has to come yet, but I sure know that what I've been doing isn't working.
Well, you guys are talking about one of my favorite subjects, complexity theory, self-organization, emergence, and the work of Otto Scharmer and the U-Lab and the U-Theory. You touched on all of that. And has that influenced you getting here?
It does. It does certainly influence me and probably John as well. Yes. And I've known Otto Scharmer for a number of decades as well. And when he came through, you know, asking a number of people who were very creative in their ways, inventing a new economic theory, they always seem to have a follow pattern of, what do I need to let go? First, how am I willing to look at reality the way it is, without judgment, but just as the way it is? And when do I need to let go of my own views and my own attachments so that I can open my mind, open my heart, open my will to let something emerge that wasn't there until now, or was there but latent, and then crystallize it into something that I can prototype in the future. And yes, and we decided, Jim, to follow this early on in a regenerative elder process, because we felt that was a lead-in into something that needs to happen both at the individual level and the collective level. So yes, the influence is there.
Yes, in fact, isn't this podcast a prototype that came out of some work with U-Lab and Otto Scharmer?
Indeed.
Excellent. Well, I'm really excited about it. John, any last words for our audience before we end the first podcast?
Well, first, let me just say I'm excited about, you know, this journey with Jim and Alan, and even more exciting to bring you, the listener, into a series of conversations with us. I think, as we said at the beginning, I think we all know the path we're on is not working, at least not optimally. It's not the best that we can do. And so I just hope you'll come on the journey with us. Send us your ideas, always, of people and interesting ideas that you think we need to explore. Know that we're going to be curious and have a lot of humility about knowing what the way forward is. And just invite you to be a part of the conversation with us, and hope it will spur conversations when you're not with us.
Mm-hmm. Alan, last words?
Yes, and the word conversation is interesting because it means to turn toward each other. Conversation, that's the Latin origin of the word. And that's really what we want to do. And I was talking about dialogue, which is another way of saying, yes, we... John and I will, in a way, initiate that. We hope that you bring in your own voice in a certain way with your responses, and you, so that we engage in a larger open conversation with you.
Well, it's been really exciting to spend this time with John and Alan and talking about the way forward, regenerative conversations. And I look forward to having you all listen to us again. Thank you very much for joining us today.